Hello and welcome to Ditching Hourly. I'm Jonathan Stark. And today I am joined by guest Emily O'Meara. Emily, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
So for folks who maybe haven't heard your name before, can you tell us a little bit about who you are and what you do?
Sure. I am a positioning consultant for startups who are in the cloud native ecosystem. And basically what this means is that I help technical founders who are creating products for other software engineers, usually describe their product, describe what they do, figure out what the core value that they provide is, and articulate it in a way that makes sense to their audience. And also to segment their market. So figure out who is going to find the most value in their product or service.
Killer. All right, great. So we were chatting and you had mentioned that you were using LinkedIn for prospecting. So connecting with folks in that target market to, potentially see if there was a good fit between you and them. And it sounded like you're having really good results from that. So I asked and you agreed to come on the show and share a little bit of how that went, what you did, sort of the high level strategy that you employed, and then, you know, any specific tactics that you think others might benefit from.
Yeah, absolutely. So the first thing I wanted to say was that when you first mentioned this and said it seemed like I was really successful with LinkedIn and other people might benefit, my first reaction was, what? Who? Me? And I think that is because LinkedIn is usually talked about as a social network. And I am not a social network person. I haven't used Facebook. I do have an account, but I haven't used Facebook for years. And I'm just not a social network person. And I don't use LinkedIn like a social network. So if you do a Google search and you search how to get the most out of LinkedIn, you'll get a bunch of results that refer to LinkedIn's social networkiness. Mm-hmm. So it'll be stuff like respond to comments within 24 hours or things like that. Mm-hmm. This is not what I do at all. Not to say that I never post things on LinkedIn. I do. But I would not say that's where my success comes from.
Right.
However, I use LinkedIn extremely heavily every day. And I use it to connect with people who are in my target market, both people who are potential buyers of my services and other people who are interesting. So I have a podcast, it's called The Business of Cloud Native. And one of the things I use LinkedIn for is to find potential guests and in general, just to connect with people in the industry. Oh, I should also mention, I write for the New Stack. My way back background is as a journalist. So I write for the New Stack, which is a tech publication. I also use LinkedIn very heavily to find people to talk to. And so what you're noticing though, is that I use LinkedIn to find people. And this is what LinkedIn is all about. It is a place to find people and to be found. And so ideally you want to make it easy to find you and also know how to use LinkedIn in order to find the people that you might want to connect with. So that's where I think LinkedIn's magic is. It's not about posting stuff and commenting on it and stuff. Maybe there's magic there for someone else, but not for me.
Hmm. So let's drill into how to make it easy for people to find you. I think you just said, how did you do that? Or what do you do around that?
So I have a couple of really good examples here actually from today. But the bottom line is that you want to make it so that in your sort of top level description of what you do, you know, sometimes this will be software engineer at Bank of America. That's actually not terrible. So let's say that I'm writing a story and I need a source who's a software engineer at a financial institution. Boom, I'm going to send you a message. That's not the worst LinkedIn title ever, right? If your LinkedIn title is breaking things or dumpster diving, right? Some people get really creative about these things, right? So if yours is dumpster diving, that probably means that you're an angel investor. Anyway, the key is that you want it to be pretty clear what you do and why somebody might reach out to you. The example actually from today is that I got a connection request from 70 and their title said abogado. So So abogado means lawyer in Spanish. I have a fairly large network of people, not really related to my profession, but people that I know in Spanish-speaking countries. I lived in Nicaragua, I lived in Spain. Anyway, but still I saw this and I was like, do I need a lawyer in a Spanish-speaking country? No, is this somebody that I need to talk to? Probably not. But I wasn't very busy, so I clicked on his profile. And boom, it turns out this guy, who happens to be in Argentina, specializes in open source software licensing. I want to have this guy on my podcast. I've been looking for somebody like this. I would have ignored it if I hadn't been having kind of a slow morning and was looking for ways to waste time.
Right.
And that would have sucked both for me and for him.
Right. So the takeaway here is like something that's really vague or clever, but not clear is you're just shooting yourself in the foot.
Exactly. And even something that maybe we don't think of as super vague, something like lawyer. Nobody looks for just a lawyer. Usually they look for a lawyer who does something specific. So as specific as possible, you know, and we could get into, you know, do you make it actionable? Do you just have it be a noun or whatever? But I think for most people, just making it something that's going to be clear to whoever your target audience is, that's going to improve like it dramatically.
Right, right. Yeah, I think of it as wearing a t-shirt to a barbecue that says, you know, whatever, whatever you want people to talk to you about. So if I feel like talking about martial arts, just say like, I'll wear like a black belt t-shirt. And people who care about that, if that's what I want to talk about, I'm not interrupting anybody or, you know, bugging anyone. But if someone wants to talk about that or ask me about that, they've got the opening. It's almost like there's an icebreaker right there. And I think of kind of, the way I think of LinkedIn is similar to you. It's less about the social networking part and more about finding people. You put it great. And when I'm sort of moving around LinkedIn, I want to always have this t-shirt on or Twitter, wherever else. I always want to have the t-shirt on that is broadcasting the thing that I want to talk about or the thing that I could potentially help with or, you know, whatever the conversation starter is.
Yeah, so, absolutely. And that's also because, you know, if you look at somebody's profile, your name and your little bio can pop up and they could see that and that could be awesome or it could be totally meaningless.
Right. And that I think it's technically, I think it's called your headline. It's that little tagline that goes underneath your name and your face in just so many widgets all across the application, the LinkedIn site. That little snippet, and you know, it's shorter than a tweet. It's probably like 60 characters before it truncates in some places. So you want it to be really clear and concise. And, you know, things like CEO, author, speaker, big thinker. It's like, okay, I guess. I mean, maybe someone's looking for that. But I completely agree with your... Well, so that's what you're saying. So your approach is that yours was very, very specific, right? Like your t-shirt.
Yeah, my t-shirt is very specific. It's funny, I'm trying to think, like, do I use LinkedIn more to get inbound leads or more to do outbound marketing? I do both. I mean, I certainly pay quite a bit of attention to what my t-shirt says. But I think partially my personality, I have kind of a salesperson personality. So I think a lot about outbound marketing. And when I think about what I use LinkedIn for, that's what I think about. And like everything that comes inbound, like that's just gravy. And so actually what I wanted to talk about next was finding people, because that's where I think LinkedIn is really freaking amazing.
Yeah, let's do it.
So the first thing that I want to say is LinkedIn is not going to help you if you have either of these two problems. One, you're terrified of reaching out to people, or two, you have no idea who you should be reaching out to. Either one of those two problems, LinkedIn won't help. If you're terrified of reaching out to people, you probably should go get a job.
You said it, not me. But yeah.
Anyway, I used to be a journalist, and this is one thing that I'm not afraid of reaching out to people, I think partially because of the experience as a journalist.
Right.
Anyway, So I'm going to talk first about the idea of focusing on who you should be reaching out to and how to use LinkedIn for that. And then obviously you can't be afraid to just follow through. But LinkedIn is this really amazing directory. And I think some of this functionality actually is only available if you pay for it. So apologies. I obviously pay for LinkedIn because I think it's worth it. But it has these really granular search capabilities. So let's say, for example, that you know that your buyer is their general job title is director of data engineering. You can search, oh, wait, first of all, you need to know what type of company. So this is actually something that LinkedIn isn't super helpful with. But outside of LinkedIn, you should be able to focus your marketing efforts on some sort of criteria. So in my case, like companies that are in the cloud native ecosystem, I would look at sponsor lists for various different conferences, sponsor lists for different publications that I know are in this ecosystem. That's how I find my sort of list of companies that I'm going to target. And then I have a particular buyer persona. In my case, it's the founder or the CEO. In my case, it's actually pretty easy. Usually they're small companies, so it's not that challenging to find. But let's say you were selling to larger companies. If you're selling to a company or to a type of company and they're going to have like 3,000 employees, it's actually very challenging without LinkedIn to figure out who is the person in the job title who would be your buyer. If you do have LinkedIn, it's very easy because you can search for director of data engineering and you will get a name that pops up. Boom, you've just saved yourself a ton of time. However, if you don't know what type of company you want to be selling to, or you don't know what the buyer's job title is, it's worthless.
Right. So how do you figure that out?
Figure what out?
Who you want to sell to and what their job title, like how did you decide that you wanted to go after the CEO or founder of companies in the cloud native ecosystem?
Right. So first we'll start with the cloud native ecosystem part. Now I have to think, how did I get into this industry? It was sort of organic and it was sort of not organic. I should mention that I am not an engineer of any kind, but I had done technology journalism. And I really liked it. So I started writing for the New Stack, largely because one of the editors had went to the same journalism school that I did. And there was that also. I noticed that they worked with a former client of mine. And then I started writing there, and I find it really interesting. I had done technology journalism before that. And at that point, I was mostly doing marketing writing. And at that point, my buyer in an organization would have been the VP of marketing usually. And that's, figuring out exactly who your buyer is, there's a little bit of common sense. There's also a little bit of trial and error. And you have to like look at who in your customer base. I mean, so unless you're totally new starting out, you actually should be pretty clear on who your buyer is. There's going to be some commonality among your clients. And yeah, unless this is like really you're just starting, you should have a pretty good idea of what that buyer persona is.
Right. Well, you do actually you do positioning, so how do you help your clients do this? How do you help them figure out who their buyer is?
I think so when you're selling a product, the products that I'm usually helping companies position could theoretically have different buyers inside of an organization. And so part of the process is figuring out which of those buyers is going to actually get them the most value. So the first step is there's often a difference between the user and the buyer. So in my client's case, that's one of the differences between being a consultant, I think. You're less likely to have a disparity between buyer and user. So with my clients, when they're identifying their target buyer, often there's a difference between the user and the buyer. There are usually at least two or three different potential buyer, depending on what value in the product you're deciding to emphasize and
Right.
how you're positioning, how you're positioning, which means like what market category label you're slapping on your product. So the buyer, figuring out who the buyer would be like but one of the last steps in the process. And it would be fairly natural as long as we've done the first part of the process where we're identifying which value is most important, what the relationship between the user and the buyer is, then it would be fairly obvious. You could maybe argue about is it a VP level or is it a director level? That's a little bit less important. But thinking about, so for example, is it like platform engineering or is it development?
Got
Those
it.
that's the distinction if for my clients, that's important.
That makes sense. Okay, yeah, so I do see that that's pretty different than like a someone selling services. Okay, so once you know who you're looking to connect with, looking to find, and you've got maybe some idea of a title, you've got maybe a company size. Is that another common? What are some of the other search criteria you'd use?
So honestly, before I go to LinkedIn, I would have my list of companies.
Got it. Okay.
I don't know how you would use LinkedIn to find a list of companies. You probably can. I never have.
So that's where you'd use the sponsor list from the conferences and publications and stuff.
So what I use LinkedIn for is to find the person who's in the job title that I'm interested in contacting, the job title that's my buyer,
At a specific
and
company.
at a specific company. And then, oh, by the way, it is possible that there could be multiple buyers, even as a consultant. I'm pretty loose about my LinkedIn standards. So let's say there's a CEO, a VP of marketing, and a VP of sales. So my ideal buyer is the CEO. The VP of sales and the VP of marketing are also going to feel positioning pain. I will connect with them too.
Okay. And then once they do you put anything in that connection request, or is it like a blind connection?
It all depends. So, like I said, I use LinkedIn for a variety of different things. Connecting with my target buyers, trying to get people on my podcast, trying to interview people for articles. If I'm just doing sort of LinkedIn prospecting, all I do is I send a connection request. That's it.
Yep.
And incidentally, if you have a giant fear of reaching out to people, this is a pretty low ask. So maybe this does help you get over that.
Right.
If I'm trying for something else, so if I'm trying to get someone on my podcast or whatever, I'll usually send them an email.
Oh, okay.
Or I'll send them a note with the connection request. It all depends. Like, actually, I had a guy on my podcast last week, and his LinkedIn headline basically says like, "Do not send me a connection request unless I know you." And I didn't know him, so I was like, "Well, darn, I'm not going to send him a connection request, but he'd be a great podcast guest." Because I had read the description of the things he's interested in, and I was like, "That's exactly what my podcast is about." So I didn't send him a connection request. I sent him an email, and he responded, like 30 minutes later, and he went on my podcast.
Amazing.
And it also just goes to show that if you can send somebody a connection request or an email, and you make it clear that you're offering something that they need, that you're relatively, that you took some time to read their profile, you can get a ton of information from their profile. So, you're reaching out to somebody who's like clearly super busy, and I think he's, in addition to being an analyst, I think he might be an investor, whatever. Bottom line, like, he probably has gobs of money and tons of people who want to connect with him and bother him for whatever reason. But not that many people who are going to say, "Hey, I saw you have like three bullet points in your description of things that you're interested in, and my podcast is about two of those three. So do you want to come on?" When if you can send somebody a message like this, that they do not get a message like that every day, and they will usually pay attention, even if they're very busy people.
Yeah, and this is one of the great, I totally agree with that. And it's, and I'm on the receiving end of that sometimes too. And when it's clear that the person has done a little bit of homework and they're asking a relevant question or making a relevant request, I'm way more open to reading it and like taking them seriously than one of these like, check out my portfolio and like a link, a list of like five links. Like they're giving me homework to do to like maybe give them money. It's like that is not going to happen. So, but the thing I really want to point out is this is one of the great reasons to have a podcast, even if you don't care about creating a big podcast audience, because it gives you something to invite people to. It's like, hey, could I kind of put you on a pedestal for a half an hour and you can regale us with your expertise in this space? And the people who are listening are going to be the exact kind of people who care about this thing that you care about. So, you can connect them. Like connecting people is a big deal, especially, I was about to say these days, I don't just mean like pandemic. I mean, just in the knowledge economy or whatever you want to call it, the connection economy, the passion economy, whatever this economy is that we're in, connecting people, leading people, these are the kinds of things that create real value. So, and oh, by the way, when they come on the podcast, they get to know you. You create a relationship with them. You've kind of done each other a mutual favor. I mean, I'm assuming that's how it works. That's how it works with me. But now that you've had a maybe a half an hour, an hour long phone call with this person, that's a big difference between some rando just sending them a connection request against their will.
Yep, that is exactly right. And I wanted to add about the podcast because I love having a podcast too, that you learn a lot, and it ends up, presuming that your podcast isn't somehow related to the work that you do, you learn a lot of stuff that you would not otherwise know, and that increases your value to your clients.
Excellent. Cool. So start a podcast, ladies and gentlemen. You heard it here on the podcast. Okay, so where so you send out either a blind connection request or an invite of some kind, either to the podcast or for an interview, and what generally happens next?
Good question. So actually I wanted to talk about one thing, one other feature of LinkedIn beforehand, before I get into that. And that's the connections in common, widget. And I bring that up because that is one of the things that I think is really cool about LinkedIn. It's sort of directory in terms of it being a directory, and also part of the magic when you're really focused on a very small market. Because it starts to be that you're sending blind connection requests, but you're sending them to somebody with whom you have 50 connections in common or 100 connections in common. And so that person sees that and they're like, oh, look, I have 100 connections in common with this person. I'll say yes, like even if they don't really like getting a connection request, whatever. It changes the ask a little bit. So I just wanted to point that out. That is a benefit that only accrues when you're focused on a very narrow market, but it is real. And at this point, I don't think it's not true that I never send a connection request to someone I don't have any connections in common to, but it's quite rare. Usually like at least a handful. I do wish LinkedIn had a way to like surface everybody who I had at least 100 connections in common with. If I could do that, I would like send connections to everybody with whom I have a certain number of connections in common with. That feature doesn't exist. But anyway, so I just wanted to highlight that's one of the ways that LinkedIn can really work and really help you build a network, but it only works if you're in a fairly small niche.
Right. Great. Yeah, great point. I totally agree. I do the same thing. Like when I see someone like, oh, 44 connections in common, I'm like, oh, accept,
Exactly.
Right. Okay. So then, so with that said, I don't want to put words in your mouth. I can guess what happens next, but could you sort of tell, give us the range of things that could happen next, or if there are any
Sure.
follow-up actions that you would normally
So
do?
the range of things that happen next is nothing. They ignore your request. They look at your profile and proceed to ignore your request. They accept your request. They accept your request and send you a message that they want to talk to you, in the next hour. Is that possible? I mean, these are all outcomes that have happened. The first thing that I just want to make sure to stress, because I know consultants like to stress about this, is that it's okay if people ignore your connection request. It's also okay if they look at your profile and then ignore your connection request, even though that is the one that hurts worse. and in fact, you should expect that both of those things will happen. So LinkedIn does have this feature. You can see everyone who has looked at your profile. And if I'm like really feeling like I need to get more work or something, I'll follow up with people who looked at my profile. Mm-hmm. I haven't done that for a while, but it can get people to hire you that maybe they just got distracted by something else.
Right.
Then there will be a certain number of people who see you, check out your profile, send you a message that's like, oh my God, I was looking for somebody like you. Can we schedule a discovery call? When's the earliest that we can talk? That happens. And it definitely happens. I would say when I do like a big blind connection request sort of campaign, I always book myself up. Really, I'm pretty booked up usually, but if I need to get booked up, that's what I would do.
Right. And I know someone else who has an extremely specific headline. It's just like laser focused to a specific type of individual. And they went same thing when they send out a connection request, he'll get like replies like, here's my phone number. Can you call me right now?
Yeah, I totally believe it.
Yeah. But it's because he's laser focused on who he's trying to connect with and you know, what his services are for, his ideal buyers. He's laser focused on it, like right down to a job title. And he's not afraid to, you know, like you, he's not afraid to send out those requests. So when the value proposition is that clear and he's laser focused on the pain that he solves. So first he knew like, oh, you know, I've got a client like this. I'd like to get more clients like that. So I'm going to reach out to people and I'm going to update my headline in a way that folks like that, as soon as they see my face and my name and that headline, they're going to know that how I can help. And it's like, then it just becomes a numbers game. Connect with 100 people and you're going to get, you know, three or four that are like, please, can we talk right now?
Yep. I also wanted to mention the numbers game, because if you send out 5 connection requests, you'll get possibly no anything. But, you know, it is a certain amount the numbers game, because you do, even somebody who is your target buyer, who really needs your service, that person may or may not be in the space that they are able to act on it right now, immediately. It might be 6 months from now that they're able to act on it. And that's okay. But if you hit enough people, then you'll be able to, then, you know, somebody will be in the right moment and able to act. And probably like, this is probably like, connecting with them is probably checking something off of their to-do list that they didn't even know how to address.
Mm-hmm. Right. It's like doing them a favor.
Yeah.
There's a great passage in, I think it's the Chet Holmes book, Ultimate Sales Machine, where he talks about, he was like, if you're in a room of 100 people, probably only 3% are active shopping, like preparing to buy any given thing. So like if you go to a room and say, hey, who is actively shopping for a car right now? Probably buy a car in the next week. 3 hands go up. How many people are planning on remortgaging their house in the next, you know, month? 3 hands go up. You know, so like if you connect with 100 people that are, you know, likely to be in your target market, or specifically, you know, their job title, is, you know, probably going to be a relatively small percentage of people who, like you said, are prepared to act. But that shouldn't really be discouraging, because the other 97%, now you're connected with them. And when that day comes that they do need what it is that you do and they can act, then, you know, you're potentially the first person on their list.
Yeah. And then the other thing you can do with LinkedIn is you can search your own connections. So let's say you have 3,000 connections and some of your connections are related to your consulting business and some of them are like your neighbor or all of your friends from graduate school. you can sort all of your connections and pull out everyone whose title is CEO, for example.
Right.
And then if you wanted to reach out to everyone who's already as part of your connections, you have sort of an easy way to sort through that and say like, okay, here are all the founders that are in my list of connections and I can reach out to them.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that it also can sort of be a good way to keep track of people that you've already connected with,
right,
and sort through them. Because again, I mean, you can't really manually sort through 3,000 people.
Yeah. You'd have to almost use LinkedIn as a back end and have a different front end, like some kind of CRM or something that had links to their LinkedIn accounts or something, because the interface is, it leaves a bit to be desired.
Yeah, definitely.
But like you're saying, you know, if you can get specific about who you're trying to find, it's pretty amazing.
Yep. I mean, and I don't consider my own strategy to be like really that sophisticated, honestly. Again, that's why I was a little bit taken aback when you were first like, oh, Emily, your LinkedIn strategy seems to be very successful.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's a couple of components that you do that a lot of people maybe don't do. And I mean, the first one is you do it every day, or at least a lot, you know,
I also waste time on LinkedIn. So that is a pitfall.
Fair enough.
But I think to be fair, like when I feel like I want to waste some time, I often like click around LinkedIn and I'm sending connection requests. Oh, look, this person looks interesting. Let's connect.
Right.
So that is something I do almost every day. And it's not really a chore, but I do think cumulatively it moves things forward.
Right. Yep. So that's one thing, is that you do it regularly. And another thing is we've said it a bunch of times already, but you're hyper-focused on a type of company and a job title within that. So it's extremely, extremely focused. And you've got credibility from the new stack. You've got credibility from the shared connections. And you've got if you want to use it, you've got a really generous ask, like the invite to the podcast or to be interviewed, which is something that, as you as you told us already, it can be, you know, can get a yes when someone explicitly said don't connect with me, and still you did and got a yes. So, you know, that combination of things, I think it pays off. I mean, I know people who don't do all of those, and it just feels like, this feels like I'm wasting time, or this is torture. They feel skeezy because they feel like they're trying to trick people or something like that. And, you know, and it just doesn't work, you know, it just doesn't work for them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, I think another thing just to highlight is I really think of LinkedIn as a tool. You know, it's a tool that helps me execute my strategy for my business. I could still run my business if this were the 1970s and I was calling people on landlines.
Mm-hmm.
It would be harder. I probably couldn't run it like all remotely like I do now, but I could do it.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Between trade shows and the phone book and conferences and stuff like that.
Yeah, no problem. I'd do a lot more in-person meetings. I'd probably have to move. You know, I'd be in a larger city for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it'd just be different technology. The general strategy would not be different.
Right. Cool. Okay. So maybe as we wrap up here, I'm curious, do you do anything? There's two questions I have for like the sort of point in the life cycle of the connection request that we got to. So one is, do you do anything with the people who connect but don't engage? Do you like periodically go through and say, oh, thanks for connecting? Or do you try and start a conversation there? Or do you just sort of wait until you're going to do, you know, some kind of campaign where you want to scare up some work because your Q4 looks slow, and then go through those? Or do you have like a specific thing that you do with the people who connect but don't engage or reply?
This is more, you know, what do I do if Q4 is looking slow?
Mm-hmm.
So because to me, poking around and sending connection requests is something that I do as, you know, a way to sort of unwind almost.
Right.
I do that very regularly. It's also, you know, sometimes I have like two meetings and there's only 15 minutes between them or half an hour between them. I can't really focus on doing something. But I can look at LinkedIn for 15 minutes. So I do that very, very, very regularly.
Mm-hmm.
Anything more than that, if I'm getting a ton of of inbound requests and I'm like booked up and I don't really need any more work, then no, I don't do anything else. If things are slow or if I'm panicking for other reasons that have nothing to do with reality, which in fair enough have had that has happened. If it's like mid-March and you're irrationally thinking that your work is about to dry up, even though it is not, then I might do that and then terribly overbook myself.
Right.
Anyway, yeah, I don't do anything. It's like everything with marketing. I think you sort of have to you tailor it to what your schedule is looking like. You're going to do more if you have less work. You're going to do less if you have more work.
But you always do a little. So,
Yeah, I do
yeah,
always do a little.
that's a key point. It's like you can't, the night before your dentist appointment, you can't floss 365 times. Like you have to do it every day if you want to get the benefit.
And also, so I do a podcast. I've done the podcast now for 10 months, I think. I write for the New Stack. I have the LinkedIn profile. I get a lot of people that come to me, they're searching LinkedIn for my name because they read my work in the New Stack, or because they know somebody that I've worked with before. So I do have a fair amount of inbound leads, and the work for them that I do for the New Stack, it's like somebody's kind of pushing me to do it. It's not entirely, I don't have to be entirely self-motivated, which is helpful.
Cool. Okay, that's fabulous. Where can people go to find out more? Like maybe they know someone who's in the Kubernetes space or a startup in the sort of cloud ecosystem or tooling for devs. Where could they go if they wanted to recommend you to someone?
Lots and lots of places. So, if you are a listener, I would imagine actually a fairly large percentage of your listener would of your listeners would be interested in the New Stack. So go to the New Stack to read all of my wonderful articles about cloud native. You can search for me, Emily O'Meara. You just read the New Stack. It's a really cool publication. So that's place one. Then you can go to my website, which is emilyomier.com. My last name is Omier. And you can find the business of Cloud Native on my website. You can also find the business of Cloud Native on that's my podcast. The business of Cloud Native is on Spotify and Apple Podcasts and everywhere you can listen to podcasts. What else? I also have a blog on my website that's mostly going to be about positioning, and it's mostly relevant if you're either interested in growing an open source project. There's some focus on positioning for open source projects, and then also, of course, if you are a startup that is in the cloud native ecosystem. And then lastly, since this is all about LinkedIn, you can find me on LinkedIn. I think the best way to do so is just to search for my name. It's not a terribly common name, so I'm probably the only Emily O'Meara on LinkedIn.
Probably, yes. Fabulous. Well, thanks so much for coming on and sharing that, your sort of LinkedIn outreach process. I know a lot of people struggle with this, and it's for the right person, it's a fabulous tool, as you pointed out. So if you are super focused down, you know who you're trying to find, LinkedIn might be a great place to go to find them and connect.
Cool. Thank you so much.
Hey, my pleasure. All right, folks, that's it for this time. I'm Jonathan Stark, and you've been listening to Ditching Hourly. See you next time. Bye. Would you like to learn how to get paid what you're worth? How about selling your expertise and not your labor? What about making more money without working more hours? We work through all of this together in the pricing seminar. Registration starts soon, so head on over to thepricingseminar.com to add your name to the announcement list. That URL again is thepricingseminar.com. I hope to see you there.